one thing he taught me was do the exact opposite of what I did.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. I just got done recording the most raw and intense episode that I've done so far. There were things that were said on today's episode that were absolutely mind-blowing and shocking to me, and I absolutely was not expecting it. And I cannot thank today's guest enough for being as open as he was. My guest today is Mr. John Pulling. I'm not going to go into detail like I normally do about today's episode. With this interview being so raw, I want you to experience it firsthand. Words will not do this justice, so I'm not even going to try. So after you're done listening to this episode, go on to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and let us know how we're doing. And also make sure to hit that subscribe button. And once that's all said and done, share the show with a friend. Sharing the show with a friend really gets these stories out there. And if you have a guest suggestion, drop us a line at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. In between episodes, if you want to stay connected with us, you can hit us up on social media at facebook.com/madeuspodcast or on Instagram and Twitter @madeuspodcast. If you're enjoying the show or have any comments, drop us a line and let us know. I always appreciate reading the comments, and I will always do my best to try to respond to you. So with that being said, again, I cannot thank John enough for being as open as he was and as candid as he was on this episode. He said some tough things, and he held back no punches, and that's incredible. So again, with all that being said, here's my conversation with John Pulling. John, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
How was your day, buddy?
Good, good.
Yeah?
Just picking up after the holidays.
Nice, that's always fun. So let's dive right in here. Let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is John Pulling. I'm 40 years old. I've got 3 kids.
Nice. How old are your kids?
Geez, this year, well, right now, 15, 14, and 11. Logan will be 12 Monday.
Okay, nice. Little birthday party for him?
Yeah, right after Christmas, too. What a lucky guy.
Oh, that sucks.
For me.
Yeah. No, I always feel like the kids get hosed on that, too. I mean, maybe not your kids, but I always feel like anybody I know that has a birthday right around Christmas always seems to get hosed, or at least they feel they get hosed.
My nephew's birthday is on Christmas.
Oh, that's...
He gets hosed.
Yeah, he definitely gets hosed.
Yeah.
Or he has a really good birthday party. They just tell him, they just lie to him. Be like, here's your birthday.
Let's see, he's going to get 6 presents. We'll say 3 are his birthday and 3 are for Christmas.
We put up a birthday tree for you.
Everybody's celebrating your birthday today.
So you have 2 girls and a son?
2 girls and a boy.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, Logan's, he's the youngest.
Okay, nice.
2 girls are a whole 13 months apart.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, that was worse than having twins.
Yeah, and they're both teenagers now.
Now, yeah, that's not something I was ready for.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and one's driving.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, she almost hit the house the other day.
Jesus Christ.
That's why they make Xanax, because she was doing good, and then she was pulling into the driveway, and instead of hitting the brakes, she hit the gas and came about 3 inches from the front of the house.
Yikes.
Yeah, she put it in park, and I pulled it in after that.
Holy cow. Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. She's only gone through like 2 red lights and a stop sign with me. So she's doing awesome.
Oh, the joys of learning how to drive.
I told her I was going to take her to a graveyard so that she couldn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
They're already dead.
There you go. Just take out all the tombstones.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Tombstone out. That's fine. Better than going through somebody's house.
Yeah, no
joke. Let alone mine.
No joke.
But no, it's going good. My middle one, she doesn't want to do anything with driving.
Really?
I think she's scared because of my oldest one.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, no, I don't want to. She's more focused on just playing sports and hanging out with her friends. So,
well, that's not too bad.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, because already going through one driving and then right into another one, I could use a little break.
Yeah. I can imagine mentally. Yeah. A break and a drink.
Oh, lots of drinks. I went, with it being New Year's yesterday, I went and grabbed a bottle of Jameson on the counter, and realized that it was just about empty.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Mackenzie's been driving.
Oh, no. Yeah, New Year's was interesting for us. We didn't do much. We played the fake Netflix countdown for the boys. They went to bed. My wife and I barely stayed up for the ball drop, and then that was it.
Yeah, the past couple of years, I started dating Electra, And she's got two little ones that are 7 and will be 2 here pretty soon.
Okay.
And it's getting to the point where, you know, right after the ball drops, you know, I'm in bed.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I think last year I went to bed at like 11:30. I didn't even bother staying up for the ball.
Yeah, I don't remember if we stayed up for the ball last year or not. I know this, you know, obviously this year we did and went straight to bed. But I know years past we haven't. I know if it wasn't last year, it was the year before that we watched a movie in attempt to stay up and then missed it anyways. So we ended up just watching the movie through midnight. And you're like, whoops, that defeated that purpose.
Yeah, that's the perk of getting older. I think that, you know, when I was early 20s, even all the way up to mid 30s, you know, it was always going over to somebody's house, getting hammered drunk and seeing if you could stay awake till midnight. And the older I get, it's like, I really don't want to stay up till midnight.
Yeah.
But I feel socially obligated just to watch the ball drop and then go to bed.
That is a weird social obligation to stay up because, yeah, I get it. It's the calendar rolls, whatever. But at the same point, you're like, it's tomorrow. Okay. Yeah. It's the next day. It's just like yesterday.
Yeah. It's nothing changes. There's really no reason to stay up anymore. And
yeah, that's kind of how I feel too.
I don't drink. So it's not like, I mean, if I do, it's like 1.
Yeah.
And then I'm done. And I don't know. It's, it seems like it's a young kid's holiday now.
It definitely is. It definitely is.
For either sure. That or it's the older generation's holiday where their kids are moved out and they don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, I don't have that.
So, no, neither do I.
So it's going to be a while for me.
Yeah.
You don't have quite as long as I do, but it'll be a while for me.
Well, I was doing good with that, you know, with the kids becoming teenagers and everything. But now I've got, you know, Electra moved in. So it's like when she moved in, her youngest was maybe 8 months old.
Okay.
So I went right back into the baby stage.
That's rough.
I've still yet to change a diaper.
Good for you, though.
I told her, I said, look, I'm done changing diapers.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Wow.
And she's, you know, she's fine with it. She's been a single mom for, you know, her whole life, basically.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, that's fine. I'll change the diapers. Like, I'll feed her. I'll love on her. I'll cuddle with her. I'll do all the fun stuff. I'm just going to be the fun uncle, though. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not playing that role of changing poopy diapers anymore.
Oh, man. You're like, I'm going to be the fun guy.
Yep. And funny. My kids hate it.
That's
they love her, but they see that I don't discipline her kids because I can't.
Yeah.
Which makes it a unique dynamic in the house.
I can imagine.
My kids will look at me and be like, Dad, you wouldn't let us do that when we were that age.
Yeah, that's different. I can definitely see that. We've had that recently. Not necessarily the same aspect, but my nephew is in town. He lives in Houston, comes in town, and will usually stay with us while he's here. And it's the same thing. It's like, he's 9, you know? So it's hard to like... I want to discipline him the same way I would discipline my children, but then at the same time, I'm not his parent, but I'm not going to let him do anything he wants at my house either, you know? So it's a fine line of where is appropriate, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard finding that line.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, with her ex lives down in Georgia.
Okay.
So he sees them maybe out of the entire year, maybe 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And that's for like 3 days here.
Yeah.
4 days here, and it might equal 2 weeks. So they're 100% in my care all the time.
Yeah.
But I can't discipline them.
Oh, man.
And it's not like she's telling me I can't.
Yeah.
It's me telling me I can't. Because, I can imagine. One, when I raised my kids, I spanked them.
Yeah.
And you can't do that anymore. And that's where it's like, if I spank this kid, is she going to tell her dad on the phone, hey, John spanked me today?
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, the cops are at my door.
Yeah, like, CPS is at your door and all sorts of stuff. Yeah,
it's not worth it.
No, definitely not. Man, that's, that puts you between a rock and a hard place for sure.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, I love playing with them. You know, I didn't realize how much I missed having little ones around.
Yeah.
Because mine are at the age where, you know, they need dad, but dad doesn't need to be around.
That's true. They just need your money.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's about it.
Thanks for putting a roof over our heads.
Yeah. They just want that house, a car, and some food.
Yeah.
You know, but it's nice that, you know, we all get along. We all, you know, coexist very well.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah. And that was a big thing that both of us said going into it. Like, hey, if, you know, we didn't just move in without meeting each other's families or anything like that. But if the kids didn't get along, we knew it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And my kids absolutely adore babies. So I was like, well, that one's an easy one. With her older one, you know, she's been through a lot with her dad being in and out of the picture so much that, you know, she had a hard time, you know, accepting me as a male dominant role in the house. And I've talked with him on the phone a couple of times and told him, look, I'm not her dad. I'm not trying to be her dad.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that I've got to do. Like, she doesn't know how to ride a bike and she's 7.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if you want to teach her how to ride a bike, get up here. Because her family's up here. I'm like, get up here, spend some time with your mom. Teach your kid how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to do it because that's not fair.
No, you're absolutely right. That's not fair.
And he was like, well, you know, I won't be able to be up there for until, you know, another 6 or 7 months. I'm like, but then I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because it was summertime already. And by the time he was coming up, it was going to be Christmas. And I was like, she's not going to be able to go out there in the snow and learn how to ride a bike.
No, for sure. Yeah, that puts you in a tough situation. But sometimes you have to do what maybe isn't necessarily right towards another parent, but what is right for the kid.
And that's exactly it. Because, I don't know, to me, you have to have discipline in your life.
Yeah.
You have to. And I'm really happy to be a dad. I love being a dad. It's the coolest thing in the world. I didn't really have one in my life.
Okay.
And when he was, me and my brother, we always said the one thing that he taught us was what not to do.
Yeah.
So it made both of us like awesome dads.
Yeah.
To the point where even my older daughter, who, you know, she's going to be 16 soon, she usually has like 4 of her friends staying the night every time that I've got them.
Okay.
Because I'm the dad.
Yeah.
And they like hanging out. We have a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
I goof on them. I'll sit there and do the floss as they're walking into the house just to make things as uncomfortable as possible.
Oh, that's great. My wife was making fun of me trying to do the floss with the boys last night.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it got out of hand. Yeah. I can only do it if it's like half speed.
Oh, no. See, you got to stick your game up. That's the nice thing with Logan. He's, you know, he'll be 12. Yeah, he can floss at the speed of light.
Yeah, my 7-year-old can floss.
Yeah.
And my 4-year-old can just about do it.
Wow.
Spot on. It's pretty close.
That's good.
Yeah.
And, but I pride myself on my dad jokes.
That's awesome.
And I'll bust into her room, be like, you know, bust out like 4 or 5 dad jokes. And I got them Alexas for Christmas.
Yeah.
So I'll bust in there and they're listening to mumbled rap or whatever they got, you know, the kids listen to nowadays. Yeah. And I'll be like, hey, Alexa, play Megadeth, you know, or play Hollywood Undead. You know, I'll go with something as obscured as possible.
Yeah.
And I made the mistake of going in there and play Green Jelly.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it went to the most vulgar song.
Oh, no.
I was like, no, Alexa, stop. Anything but that one.
Oh, no.
It's like, all I need to do is have these kids go to their parents. Yeah, we like hanging out with Mr. Poling. He lets us listen to the most vulgar music ever.
Whoops.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, it happens. So, since we're talking about childhood, that's kind of what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you talk about having a male figure not really in your life and you teaching you.
Yeah. My mom and dad, my mom passed away in 2009. And the one thing that I can say is that she tried.
Okay.
She tried her hardest. Failed miserably, but she tried her hardest.
I'm sorry, that's not funny. That's not funny, but the way you said it.
I mean, it's true. My dad is the exact opposite. He failed horribly, but he didn't. At least he didn't try, so okay. I can't hold him up to anything, because if you don't try, you can't succeed.
Yeah, and that's hard to say.
Well, I mean,
especially as a child saying that about your parent. I know that's definitely hard to kind of come out with.
There's so many stories that I could go on where you'd be like, yeah, I want to punch this guy in the throat.
Oh, no.
I mean, he wasn't abusive. He never hit me out, and I'd have knocked him out if he would have tried.
Yeah.
He was the kind of dad that when he gets into something, he gets into it full force.
Okay.
So he got into pop back in the 60s, you know, way before I was even a glimmer. But by the time, say like 1984, between 1984 and 89, we didn't have milk in the house. We had weed.
Oh, geez.
And if we wanted to eat, we had to go to the store and buy it.
Yeah. Was he dealing? Was that
no,
the
he
deal?
Was, he was, no, you'd think, but he was always smoking.
Yeah.
And I was real sick growing up. I was born with one lung. I was just under 5 pounds.
Holy cow.
I was at Riley's a couple of times.
Really?
It wasn't until I would say I was 19, 20 years old before I actually became a healthy person.
Wow. I did not know any of that.
Yeah. Between asthma, allergies, I was getting scratch tests every 6 months. And if you've never had a scratch test, it's the worst, most uncomfortable thing in the world, where I would literally have 1-inch scratches on my back and it would cover my entire from neck to like the small of your bag.
Yeah, it's like 30 some different.
I was doing right around 75.
Holy cow, man.
And then they put these drops in and then you can't move for an hour.
Wow.
Because they want to see if there's a reaction.
Yeah.
I had a reaction to everything. Like, I was that sick kid in school.
Oh, no, you're the bubble boy.
I should have been a bubble boy.
So let me take you back for just a second here. You were born with one lung?
Yep.
So you just, I mean, you were only born with one, or you didn't have a second developed lung? Or, I mean, how?
It was one lung that was at the capacity for a 5-pound baby.
Okay.
And then one that would have been basically a nubbin.
Really?
And it didn't develop until I was around 14 or 15.
Okay, but it did finally develop.
It did finally develop,
yeah. Okay.
And I was born completely deaf in my right ear.
Really?
I had a ruptured eardrum while being born, and it never healed.
Holy cow. And that was from birth?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was about 85% deaf all the way up until like 7th grade.
Really?
I had 2 surgeries on my right ear. The first one, they put a pigskin in for an eardrum.
Okay.
And then that didn't work, so they had to do a second one, and they gave me a cadaver eardrum.
Really?
And so far, that one...
And that one's held up since?
So far. I mean, the military has made me deaf.
Yeah.
So I could probably use a new one. But that was a rough part because I couldn't talk. You know, growing up partially deaf, I couldn't say R's to save my life.
Okay.
Everything was an
Yeah.
So, you know, people think, oh, bullying is so bad. Now, I step into my shoes, it's circa 1980.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid that I had to wear a doctor's mask going to school because the cold air could take my breath away and trigger an asthma attack. And then two, I couldn't talk right. I had a speech impediment.
Oh, man.
So thankfully, my older brother is only 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
And he was a hoss, man. That kid would fight anybody. And I'm glad that he would because, you know, I was a nothing then. I was skinny. I was weak because I was always sick. And, you know, kids would grab that doctor's mask and smack me in the face with it and ask me to say words and make fun of me.
Yeah.
Punch me in the chest in the wintertime at recess and just watch me, you know, wail on the ground trying to grab my breath. And he would just come up and knock him out. And it got to the point where people were like, yeah, don't mess with him.
Yeah.
So it was nice. After a while, I was walking around school like, hey.
Yeah, it is nice to have that support system.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, if that's what you want to call it, a support system. But
well, it would have been nice, but I've got to get a hold of Guinness because I'm pretty sure I hold the world record for most moves in 10 years.
Oh, really?
I've moved 36 times in 10 years from 1990 to 2000.
Holy shit, man.
And that was going from South Bend, Mishawaka, East Lansing, a little town called Williamston.
Okay.
And then Detroit.
Wow.
It was 36 times. There isn't an apartment complex in the South Bend, Mishawaka area that I have not lived at.
That's craziness. And this is, I mean, due to your parents?
My dad was a maintenance man.
Okay.
And he had to live on ground.
Okay.
And my mom was never happy with what she had. So after 6 months, she'd be like, oh, I hate this place. I'm going to send your resume to this place and you'll get hired there and we all have to move there. And if you go to my house, like right now, I've got so much stuff in boxes in my basement. Because it's like that triggered a mental thing where I just don't unpack anymore.
Yeah.
And I've lived at my house for 3 years now. And it's like, yeah.
That's scary, dude. That's scary that it's
just
we haven't
even gotten into the military side yet.
Oh, that's scary that it's just into you to not just to leave your stuff in boxes.
And it's only my childhood stuff. All my childhood stuff I've still got. I have posters of like Dave Mustaine and Maynard James Keenan. And like all my idols of like heavy metal, rock and roll rolled up into tubes that are in my basement because I don't want to unpack.
Yeah. And you've been there 3 years.
Yeah. And I've only moved since I've been an adult, since I've been 18, maybe 6 times. Because I don't care if I go into extreme debt. I will stay where I am.
Yeah.
Because I hate moving.
it is rough. And definitely I can see that as a child growing up and moving all the time, that as an adult, you just want that permanency of like, this is where I'm at. I'm grounded here, wherever this is.
Yeah, it would be one thing if we stayed like within South Bend.
Yeah.
But going all over the place, switching schools, you know, I'd go into Detroit and coming from South Bend and going to Detroit, we were only there for maybe 8 months.
Okay.
And, you know, that's a big culture shock.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Think, you know, oh, South Bend's so big and bad. It ain't nothing until you get into, you know, north central Detroit.
Yeah. And you're a scrawny, sick white kid.
Yeah. You know, and it was rough, but at the same time, I'm glad I did because, you know, there I fell in love with, you know, music really became, you know, a huge thing in my life then because it was, you know, the grunge movement was starting.
Okay.
and being in a big city, music was everywhere.
Yeah.
Unlike South Bend, where, you've got one rock station to choose from. You know, whatever they play, that's all you got to listen to.
Yeah, that's what you hear.
Yeah, and in Detroit, and you had like seven rock stations. You want 70s rock, you go to that one. You want 80s rock, go to that one. You want like hardcore death metal, there's a station for it.
Yeah.
Plus, we had Howard Stern on the radio.
That's a little different from, because around here we don't.
No.
You know, I mean, granted, now he's not, it's all satellite radio now, but
right.
Growing up around here, we didn't have him on the radio.
No. And, you know, it opened my eyes to, I saw a lot of weird things there. It got me used to hearing Bullets.
Oh, geez.
It was no big deal to hear. I mean, you'd fall asleep with sirens.
Yeah.
You'd hear a scream, then you'd hear Bullets, and you're like, oh, okay, that was, you know, five blocks away. It's fine. Or you would hear tires squealing and bullets flying, and you'd go, oh, that was a little closer.
Yeah.
Look out your window. And
what age group was that for you?
I was probably 14.
Okay. So you knew what was going on.
Yeah. And this is great parenting because I had to share a room with my brother, Mike. We had a two-bedroom apartment, and he had a king-size waterbed. I am not even joking you. I had a cot.
Oh, geez.
But I made it my cot.
Yeah.
You know, I had all my posters up on my side of the room. We had a Super Nintendo in between us. And, you know, that's all. It was good for us because him and I bonded, like, hardcore.
Yeah.
Because we had nobody. You know, my parents, my mom turned into a little bit of a drunk at that time because she was always a stay-at-home mom, but we didn't really need her.
Yeah.
So she would watch her soaps and tie one on and pass out by 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Do you think that had anything to do with your dad?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one time where I actually saw him hit her.
Oh, really?
It was the one and only time that I actually saw him hit her. And, you know, he hit her, he left, and I just was in the living room. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let this happen.
Yeah.
I was maybe 13 or 14. She went into her room. I didn't want to get in the middle of it because I didn't know my place. I didn't want to be the next one.
Yeah.
I was never scared of him ever in my entire life. I've called him out a lot.
Okay.
Knocked him out once.
Oh, geez.
And it got heated. I went about 2 years without talking to him. And he moved down to Florida after my mom passed. Hurry up and remarried. And I thought maybe I could reconnect with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came back up here, said, oh, I'm going to move up here. And my kids started getting close to him. And he literally left in the middle of the night back down to Florida.
Really? Now, were him and your mother together at the time she passed? No. Or?
When she passed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were together. Now, see, she passed. She was 56 when she died. They were together the whole time, but they filed for divorce every 2 years.
Yeah.
And they would split. My mom would go to my grandma's house in South Bend. Sometimes we would go. Sometimes we'd go with my dad up to Williamston. That's where I moved up there. When we were with my dad, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Because I had my aunt, my uncle up there that we lived with.
Okay.
And they are some of the best parents I've ever seen.
Okay.
And I learned a lot from them. It's still to this day when I talk to them, like, I wouldn't be the man that I am had I not seen how you treat your kids and how you disciplined me and took care of me when my dad's out, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
And it was good, but it wasn't because of him.
Yeah.
It was because of my aunt and my uncle.
And that's sometimes you just have those people in your life that are those parent figures, regardless if your parents are there or not.
Yeah.
You know, you can definitely see it.
When I got married the second time to
Yeah.
My mom was already gone, and we had to do the mother and groom dance. And
yeah.
I was like, well, you know, clearly I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I danced with five women that were extremely influential in my life.
Oh, that's awesome.
Three of them being aunts.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, and they didn't know what was going to happen. And I told them, I said, well, the DJ was a buddy of mine. I was like, this is what we're going to do. You're going to call these people out. We're going to do two songs because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And you're going to call them out and they're going to come up to the dance floor. Well, my Aunt Virginia, who is 92 years old, was in a wheelchair and, you know, she couldn't.
Yeah.
So obviously I went to her and started with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she actually got out of the wheelchair and we slow danced.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then I went to the dance floor and finished with everybody else.
Yeah.
And it was cool because like my Aunt Pam is probably the hardest, like toughest woman I've ever met.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't take crap from anybody. And that's one thing that I'll always take from her. Don't take crap from anybody.
Yeah.
And she came out there, and it was I can't remember what song it was, but it was a super slow, like, You're the Inspiration by Chicago.
Okay.
She came out there, and she was trying her hardest to dance, like, kind of fast and everything, yeah. And just lost it. And she was like, I can't. I was like, no, that's what we're here. I want everyone to know that you're like a mother to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was her and a few other people. So I've always tried to make the best out of, you know, crap. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up on the northwest side of South Bend between Marquette and LaSalle High School. And, I mean, that was like the family house. We moved in and out a million times, but we always had somebody living there.
Yeah.
It got to the point where I bought ice cream sandwich or something from the ice cream man.
Yeah.
He turns the corner on Marquette Road and gets shot by a 7-year-old kid.
Holy shit.
The kid took 2 ice cream cones and went back into his room and watched TV.
That's craziness.
And that was life.
Yeah.
Where all the kids that I grew up with that were in that neighborhood, you know, I was always in and out, obviously. You know, they went from playing G.I. Joes and Transformers and stuff like that, you know, at their house to, you know, dealing coke and crack and going to prison for manslaughter and all this. And I remember walking with one of my buddies and, you know, the cops pull up and they're like, hey, what are you doing? You know, they're calling us by name. You know, and I was that white kid.
Yeah. And that's pretty crazy if the cops know you by name.
Yeah. And it's crazy that you know their first name.
Yeah.
And I was never arrested or anything like that. But there was one time me and like 4 of my buddies jumped in the back of their car and we were going to, you know, go off. And, you know, I wasn't making good decisions then. And I was smoking weed all the time.
Yeah.
And we were going to go buy weed. And we got pulled over on the way there. And then we got pulled over because it was 4 black guys and a white guy.
Oh, geez.
They thought I was the drug dealer.
Oh, yeah.
And they were buying. And they literally had us on 31, just north of Roseland, out of the car in the parking lot, on our knees, hands behind our back, pistols drawn.
Holy cow.
All of us. And I'm sitting there like, we don't have it. And I'm sitting there starting to think, do they have something?
Yeah.
You know, because they're talking like hard crap to these cops. I'm like, okay, look, they have guns out.
Yeah,
you know,
this is not good. This is
not the time to be, you know, a tough guy. And they let them go, and the cops held me back. Like, they got in the car, and they left. And they're like, what are you doing hanging out with these guys? Like, I grew up with these guys. I played G.I. Joe at their house.
Yeah.
Like, do you realize that driving around black guys is going to get you in trouble? It's like, do you understand that? That's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I never understood it because I grew up with these guys. They were my friends.
Yeah.
I still talk to them to this day. And we laugh about that situation because they just went down like 2 blocks and circled around and waited for the cops to leave because they knew I wasn't going to get into a cop car with them.
Yeah.
And this is way before cell phones. So I'm starting to freak out. And they're like, do you want us to take you home? I'm like, there's no way you're taking me back to my house.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have cops take me back to the house.
Yeah. I can imagine your parents would not be stoked about that.
No.
Let alone anybody else seeing you get out of the cop
car. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I've got a buddy of mine that lives over here, which I didn't. So I'll just go crash at his house. And they're like, all right. And they took off. And then I just started walking. I was like, well, I'm probably 10 miles from my house, but I know how to get there.
Yeah.
So I'll just walk. Like, you know. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I made it maybe to the end of the block before they pulled back up. And I get in the car. I'm like, thank you. Yeah. Jumped in the car and we took off.
Oh, shit.
You know, they were asking me, like, oh, what did he say all in there? They just told me not to hang out with you guys.
That's craziness.
I'm like, you know, and that's one of the things. Like, we had an Arabic family that lived on the road. And then we were the white family and everybody else. It was an all-black community.
Yeah.
But growing up in that, you don't look at it. We were all kids.
Yeah. You're not born into racism. It's instilled into people, but it's not, you're not born into that.
No, because if you look at all my childhood pictures,
yeah,
you know, it's every birthday party, everything. When Grease would come on TV, my mom would open up the door and scream, Grease is on TV. We would all the kids would run to the house and we would all sit there and watch the cheesiest musical ever made. But it was her favorite thing. Everybody knew that it was her favorite thing.
Yeah.
So all the kids were like, yeah, we hate it, but, you know, she likes it and she's good to us, so we're going to watch it with her.
Yeah, I grew up in a biracial household. I'm sure I've told you that before. And, you know, I never thought about it. Growing up that way, you know, my stepdad was in my life, quite a bit of my life. He's a huge 6'5", big black guy. Never thought about it. You know, it's never occurred to me that it's different. And it hit me one day. I started dating my wife. We were just dating at that time. And I was still at my mom's house. I was like 18, 19 years old right there. And we were in my room watching TV, and my stepdad came in my room to get something, to say hi or whatever. And when he left, you know, she had shock on her face, and I didn't really think about it until later. You know, this was several years down the road. She's telling this story, And she's like, we're sitting there watching TV and this giant black man comes in your room. And I don't know who he is because I never told her.
Because it was normal.
Because it was normal. I never thought to tell her that, you know, my stepdad was a big black guy.
Right.
Because it was normal. So it was.
And that's what I get. Like I was telling you before, I thought my childhood was normal. Yeah. I thought it was, everybody was poor. Everybody, not everybody, but, you know, majority of people are poor. You know, you don't, your parents suck. You know, you don't know what you're going to have for dinner that night. When I was 17 years old, I got a credit card. Just really? So that I could pay the bills for my mom and buy groceries.
Holy shit.
And that's because that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, my dad wasn't doing it. So somebody had to. At that point, my brother had moved out. So I was technically at 17, the man of the house. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I worked 40 hours a week at Meijer, making like $6 an hour and going to school full time. Wow. For high school, because you have to do it.
Yeah.
If I didn't do that, I wouldn't have eaten.
Yeah. And there are times when you're in those situations that you don't, like you said, you don't realize it's not normal.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't until Christmas and I was talking to my aunt about it. And she's like, no, you didn't have a normal childhood. You know.
And that was Christmas this year, right?
Right. Yeah. This was just a couple of days ago.
Wow.
Because my ex-wife, when I first met her, she came over to the house and I was going to be teaching her guns because she's never shot a gun at that point. And I have a Beretta 92FN, the M9, and I'm taking it apart and showing it to her. And we're just small talking.
Okay.
She been through all the same stuff that I did.
Yeah.
With her parents and everything. I was like, oh, sweet. Somebody. Yeah. See, it is normal.
Yeah.
You know, we got to talking and everything. And for her, it was nice because she never met anybody that had gone through the same things that she did.
Oh.
But for me, you know, I was always around family. So that was normal.
Yeah.
You know, we would laugh and joke about, oh, yeah, so-and-so's in prison because, you know, he killed somebody or, you know, yeah. It's like, oh, man, it took him that long to catch him, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, oh, he's got so-and-so for a lawyer, so he'll only do 3 years and we'll go pick him up, you know, down in India in a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. That's not normal. And I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you know, taking showers with no electricity. Yeah. Apparently that's not a normal thing. Like, yeah. My kids have never experienced any of this.
Yeah.
Because, like... when it comes to pay the bills, man, I'm on it now because yeah. I don't want them to experience those things. Because like I said, my dad, one thing he taught me was do the exact opposite of what I did.
Yeah.
So I do. One time, a couple of years ago, I was reading a magazine with the TV on, smoking a cigarette, and I had my legs crossed like him, and I'm drinking a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And I was my first marriage because I'd been married twice. And she said, you look just like your dad. Okay, well, thank you for opening up my eyes. This is going to stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything that he did, I always, even to this day, he just called me maybe 2 months ago, said, oh, things aren't going good here. Can I crash at your place? He's living in Florida.
Holy shit.
I live in Michigan.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, what makes you think that my house is open to you?
Yeah.
He said, well, you're my son. Like, only by birth. I was like, you can stay down there. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You could die down there. I'm not coming to the funeral. You can do whatever you want. Like, but you're not welcome in my house.
That's a hard place to mentally put yourself to.
Yeah. Me and my brother, we both feel the same way. And we talk about it all the time. My oldest brother, he told him the same thing. He's like, no, stay down there.
Yeah.
You're not welcome here. You've burned way too many bridges. Because every time we give him an inch, he takes a mile from us.
Yeah.
And then just leaves.
There's a lot of people like that, at that very like narcissistic personality. And they just, like you said, you give them an inch, they take a mile. Yeah. It's all about them and they don't care who they hurt along the way.
Right. And my biggest thing was, okay, yeah, you screwed me as a kid. That's over with, whatever, water under the bridge. But I wanted him to at least try to have a relationship with my kids.
Yeah.
Like everybody always says, oh, parents are so different with their grandkids than they are with their kids. It's like, all right, well, maybe he will, you know, change a little. He'll actually be the grandfather that he needs to be. And he keeps failing them.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets personal. Like, you can attack me all you want. I have thick skin. It doesn't matter. There's nothing that man can do to me.
Yeah.
To make me think any less of him or to even hurt my feelings. But when you go after my kids.
Yeah.
Now it's
personal.
Yeah. Now I'm just going to treat you like a man.
Yeah.
Not my father, a man. And, you know, my kids were really excited this last time he was up here and he was wanting to do stuff with them and all that. And then literally in the middle of the night, he texts me and says, hey, I made it to Florida.
That's crazy.
And I was like, I was just at your house.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean you're in Florida? So I decided to go back.
Yeah, that's one of the most painful things that I've ever experienced in my life is the disappointment of your children.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, I've been through a lot. I've had a lot of stuff growing up. But, you know, having your children disappointed in something that you knew they were excited about is just heartbreaking. Yeah. You know,
there are two times where I feel like I disappointed my kids to the point where I could still to this day, I get a little teary eyed. My first divorce was with their mother. All three of them came from this same marriage. And my oldest, when I told her that we were getting divorced, just lost it.
Yeah.
And I felt like the biggest loser. Like, I cannot believe that I let my kids down. And it was just her. It was just her and I in my car. And, you know, she was young to the point where I said, well, what if I get an apartment that has a pool?
Yeah.
A pool? You know, she got excited about that. Yeah. And it wasn't until maybe 2 or 3 years later where they both came to me with, like, heart-to-hearts individually.
Yeah.
And told me how they felt and confirmed that it was the right thing to do.
That's good.
And the fact that they understood that it was the right thing to do,
yeah,
made me feel better. But my son took it. He was only 3, going into almost 4. He took it the hardest. And it was probably 5 or 6 years before he kind of let it go.
Yeah, that's a hard age. That's a really hard age to understand and grasp with any of that.
Yeah, especially, you know, having your mom have a place, your dad have a place, and you have different routines at your mom's that you do at your dad's, and them trying to figure out the balance there. It's real hard. And we were at Lowe's in Niles one time, and he was just throwing a fit, and I pulled him down an aisle, and I go, what is it? And he wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
He was just, like, shriveled up crying. I was like, what can I do? And he just round out and just punched me as hard as he could.
Oh, geez.
And he was like, that's for leaving mom.
Oh, God.
And I was like, dude, you don't even understand.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, do you feel better or do you want another shot?
Yeah.
And he took another shot. And I was like, all right, another one?
Yeah.
And he starts laughing and like, all right, dude, look, I love you. You're like my best friend in the entire world. I would do anything for you.
Yeah.
If you want to sit here and beat the living crap out of me, do it.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it for you.
Yep. Get it out.
Yeah. And it helped. He started talking more and he got into a little bit of the hearing problems that I ran into.
Really?
And I nipped that in the butt quick. I put him into speech therapy and everything.
Yeah.
He had tubes in his ears like 3 times.
Okay.
So he had some issues, but we fixed it quick.
Do you think that's a genetic thing or do you think it's just happenstance?
I think it is because, and the only proof I have is that, you know, him and I both had it. He didn't have it nearly as bad. My ex-wife is a baby-making machine.
Okay.
Like, she spit 2 kids out in 2 years.
Yeah.
With minimum effort. I mean, Logan, the last one, I think she was in labor for 30 minutes.
Wow.
And the longest one was Leah, my middle daughter, and I think that was 1 hour.
Holy cow, man. And
Logan, she pushed once.
That's crazy.
And out he came.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, she was an absolute champ. I give her nothing but props because she had an epidural.
Yeah.
But man,
still, I don't care.
I still give her props to this day because she was, you know, not that this really necessarily matters too much anymore, but, you know, she was back to her pre-baby weight in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because she was all baby. Everything that she had was all baby.
That's incredible.
Like, her body was engineered to make babies. And, you know, she never had any after Logan. But, yeah, it was. And it's one of those things where, you know, looking back now, her and I have an awesome relationship.
Yeah.
Like, I could send her a funny meme about, you know, Logan's birthday being in January right after Christmas. And she'll text back, you know, yeah, it sucks, but I wouldn't change it for anything. And, you know, she'll send me funny memes about, you know, something in the past.
Oh, that's good.
And she's remarried now. I married after her and everything, and me and her husband get along fine.
That's great.
It was all done out of the court. We never did anything to where we put the kids in the middle.
Yeah, that's good.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I've known so many people that had a great marriage, and then all of a sudden they get divorced, and then they hate each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't hate her. She doesn't hate me. It's just we were two totally different people.
Yeah.
We got married when I was 22. And she was 21.
Yeah, that's young.
And instantly, she was about 1 month pregnant when we got married.
Yeah.
And, you know, we instantly went from newlyweds to parents. And it's hard.
Yeah, if anybody, you're still trying to grow up.
Yeah, if anybody can do it, you know, props, because it's hard.
Yeah.
And then going into your, you know, going through your 20s with a family, you know, when all your other friends are out partying and having a good time, and that was the birth of MySpace and Facebook came out.
Yeah.
And then seeing all them, you know, partying up, traveling all over the place.
Yep, and then, you're playing, you know, dad.
Yeah, then I'm here changing poopy diapers and... You know, chasing kids around and yeah. all that. And it was hard because that I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's unfair to say. I'm sure she did too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went from having big pickup truck to a minivan.
Yeah.
And it was hard, but I wouldn't change it for me. There isn't a dollar amount that I would change anything to have my kids, because they're my absolute world.
Yeah.
I even had a tattoo artist draw three hearts on my on my arm, you know, one for each kid.
Yep.
So if you ever need a tattoo, let me know. I got a guy.
Oh, I appreciate that. I do appreciate you letting me know that. I'll have to look into him.
But no, it was between my first marriage failing. That's why it was my parents. You know, they always said they stuck together for the kids.
Yeah.
And you know, that didn't work.
Yeah, I don't think that's, you know, you hear that a lot, especially from that generation.
Yeah.
That generation's a lot different than our generation. You know, you hear a lot of that. We stuck together for the kids, but you almost are worse because of it.
Yeah.
You know, they stuck together, but they fought. They were always, you know, unhappy.
Yep.
Whereas now I see a lot of parents, as you and your ex-wife, you just said, you have a great relationship now and it's better for the kids.
Yep.
You know, and I don't want to say that I'm not trying to push anybody into that right. for sure, but I think there's a big difference in that than just that mentality of like, we're sticking together for the kids, because you have all this resentment towards each other.
Yeah.
I've seen it. You know, my mother went through the same thing with her ex-husband. They stuck together for 22 years or something before they did get divorced. But for 15 of those years, it was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, there was resentment. It was fighting all the time.
Yeah.
They were trying to stick it out for my siblings, but it wasn't there. And you could see it wasn't there.
Right. And that's one thing, like I always said that if, you know, it's not like it just happened where, you know, one day I woke up and was like, hey, you know what? We should get divorced. It happened quick. And it was about 6 months at the end of the marriage that was really bad. Everything before that 6 month before the end was awesome.
Yeah.
It's something, I don't know what it is still to this day. I don't know what it is. I think it was the routine.
Yeah.
We just had a routine. You know, she didn't work. She ended up getting a job at the hospital just to get out of the house.
Okay.
I was working four jobs.
Holy cow, man.
Because, and her family is like uber Christian, that said the man works, the woman stays home with the kids.
Okay.
And I tried falling in line with that because I needed some kind of discipline in my life.
Yeah.
And I come home from an 8-hour shift to go work a 4-hour shift to go work a 3-hour shift and then go home and have my neighbor out there measuring the grass and like, hey, you know, this grass, he's retired. And he's like, hey, you know, your grass is a quarter of an inch higher than mine. Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah, I'll get to it when I get a day off. How about that? You know, and then, you know, her saying, hey, the grass is getting long. Like, whoa, that ticked me off. Like, well, what'd you do today?
Yeah.
Well, it's the man's job to mow, you know, 3/4 acre lot.
Yeah.
And when I wanted to buy a mower, I wanted to, you know, the nice self-propelled ones. She bought a push.
Okay.
So I've got 3/4 of a lot. I've got to push.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I get a day off. And she said, well, you work all the time. You never have a day off. Say that statement again.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just building up and building up and building up. And then for me, you know, it was, you know, she cut me off sexually because she just didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
She was always worried about getting pregnant again. And I don't blame her.
Yeah.
But, you know, I messed up and I cheated on her. And when I told her about it, she immediately left and cheated on me. And I was like, okay, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
I screwed up. I own it. I still, to this day, I apologize to her at least once a year.
Yeah.
Just out of nowhere, I'm like, hey, look, just want to let you know that I still have all this regret and this guilt. And it's one thing that I learned. I will never, ever make that mistake again, because one, I saw the outcome of it.
Yeah.
Was the end of, not only just the end of my marriage, but the fact that I saw what it did to her.
Yeah.
From, you know, the spouse that I said that I would be there for 100% of the time, and I screwed up that bad to where you know, it forced her to go out and do the same thing, told me, clearly there's no love here.
Yeah.
We're together because of a routine. We're used to this routine. We're just going through it. And she admitted it. She's like, you know what? I think you're right. I don't think that there's any love here.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. We have two avenues we can go through. We can get divorced and just call it a day.
Yeah.
Or we can seek counseling. And she's like, all right, let's go through counseling.
Okay.
And I started going through male counseling and then going through a couples counseling. And within one session, she was like, nope, I'm just done.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to continue mine because obviously there's something I need to fix.
Yeah.
And that was a hard pill to swallow to actually walk into a counselor's office and say, hey, I have an issue.
Yeah.
You know, something's wrong. And I was at that point, I was in the military for 3 years. So I hadn't even deployed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't blame any of that on the military because I was gone for basic training for 15 weeks.
Yeah.
And one of the best days was when I got to come home. You know, we loved each other like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because separation makes the heart grow fonder. And things were great. And after a couple of years, though, we were together 11 years before we got divorced.
Yeah.
And, you know, she'll always be in my life because we have kids together. Even when the kids are 30, 40 years old, she's still going to be a part of my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she understands that. Her husband understands that. And it's not like I would ever try to pursue her in any way, because one thing I've always said is my life moves forward, not backwards.
Yeah.
If a relationship fails, it fails for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not going to be any different the next time around.
Yeah.
There's no reason to put yourself through it again.
Yeah. I've seen multiple people, not to totally derail this, but I've seen multiple people do that where they will, you know, husband or wife number one will be husband or wife number four, you know, and then they're divorced again. You're like, it didn't work the first time. What?
Right.
Why do you think it's going to work again? You right. know?
And that's one thing, like with my second wife, I was so madly in love with her.
Yeah.
And that one hurt worse than the first one.
Okay.
Because I was completely blindsided. The amount of love that I had for her superseded anything.
Yeah.
Like, I put her on a pedestal. Anything she ever wanted, I would have given it to her.
Yeah.
If she would have told me, cut your wrist right now, I would have opened a vein.
Oh, geez.
There's absolutely nothing I would have done for her.
Yeah.
But it wasn't what she wanted. And I came home from work. I just worked like a 12-hour day. I had to go pick the kids up and got in the house. And she said, hey, I want to talk to you in the bedroom. And usually what that meant was, we'll go over our finances, you know, when the kids aren't around.
Yeah.
So I figured it was something like that. We'll go over the month's budget or whatever. So I walk in there and she literally said, I don't love you anymore.
Wow.
And you talk about, I even told her later on, I wish you had just kicked me in the nuts.
Yeah.
Because it would have not hurt as bad. And for about an hour, she sat there and told me how much she did not love me.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
And that she couldn't stand herself.
Yeah.
To be in a relationship where she didn't love the person. And she had been trying for what she said, over a year.
Wow.
To fall back in love with me.
Yeah.
And
that's absolutely brutal.
I told her, I said, if I'd have known, if you would have told me, then we could have worked on it. And she was like, well, you didn't see the signs? I'm like, no, I'm a man. I don't see signs. I see direct approach. Yes. You know, if you want to go to Red Lobster, don't ask me where I want to eat. Tell me, hey, I want to go to Red Lobster.
Yeah.
And well, that's where we would go.
Yeah.
Instead of me saying, hey, I want Chinese food. No, I don't want Chinese food. What do you want?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I want. What do you want? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Just tell me. And, you know, we kept it quiet for about a month where she could, I figured maybe she could just get her head straight. She moved out and moved in with her sister. And I said, okay, you know, I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
And she, we still talked. She came over. We went on a couple of dates. And, you know, the time just slowly started getting further and further apart where I would talk to her.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you want to do? She said, I think we need to file for divorce. And I cried like a little girl. That night, I put my pistol in my mouth.
Oh, Jesus, man.
And the only reason why I didn't do anything was because of my kids.
There's, yeah.
That my biggest fear is my kids finding me like that.
Yeah.
And I she made it through a deployment.
Yeah.
I was gone for a year in Afghanistan. And every day that I was there, she was the only person I thought of.
Yeah.
Well, and my kids, obviously. But, you know, that first embrace when I got home, I wanted it to be her.
Yeah. You know, I think with people too, you know, in her, in your ex-wife's case, I think when somebody makes that mental switch, it's over. It doesn't really matter. You know, as much as you want to try, I think when somebody has actually made that switch, there's no bringing them back. You know, and it's the same thing. You know, I'm going to equate this to something totally stupid, but it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you wanted something for dinner and you made up your mind you didn't want that, you don't want it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And obviously that's really lame and generic to say about love, but it's the same. Like once somebody's made up their mind that you're not bringing them back, you know, no matter what you want to do, you're not bringing them back.
Right.
And that's heartbreaking.
It is. And you know, what's hard is, you know, we had a lot of mutual friends and, you know, a lot of our friends, you know, have said, oh, well, you know, what she did was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because they know what I went through with her. She was in a horrible spot. And, you know, for me, it was like, oh, you know, I have a hero complex. So I was like, oh, I'll save the day. And I fell absolutely. I mean, I can tell you the day I fell in love with her was one of the first times I ever saw her.
Really?
And because she was the day she came over to work on guns. I was actually trying to hit on somebody else. And I was like, hey, you should come over to my house. I'll teach you how to, you know, take guns apart and all that. And she worked with me and she was getting in her locker.
Yeah.
And when I was done talking to this other girl, she came over. She goes, hey, you said that, you know, you have a lot of guns. I was like, well, yeah. Like, well, do you mind if, you know, maybe I come over? And I was like, well, one, she's freaking drop dead gorgeous. And I was like, okay, whatever. And I'd been single for a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, as ugly as I am, I thought I had like this awesome game, you know, between Match.com and all the other internet sites that I was going through. You know, it was easy to get a girl. I didn't have any trouble with that.
Yeah.
But she came over and I remember we were sitting there talking about stuff. And they're like, so you want to go upstairs? And she kind of chuckled and she's like, no.
No.
I was like, no. Who says no anymore? And I was like, all right. And, you know, she starts putting it together and taking it apart herself. And I was like, yeah, you're doing really good with that. She's like, no, I'm a fast learner. I was like, all right, you want to go upstairs? She's chuckling. She said, no. It's like, I'm not used to this people. Usually, if I take a girl out, I'll buy her food. And she asks me to her place. And all this is stupid. I don't understand this. So, but her putting up a fight and, you know, she wanted to be chased.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued.
Yeah, that did it for you?
Yeah, and I was just like, huh. Well, she came in, I mean, still to this day, not to this day, but we would always talk about, because I haven't talked to her in a long time, but the day that she came over, I can tell you the outfit she was wearing.
Yeah.
And it was dead of winter, and there was probably 20 inches of snow on the ground, and she was wearing these knee-high boots, and she had these black leggings on, and I was like, that is the sexiest look. Like, man. And she was so, like, a mixture of like punk rock and heavy metal, you know, with piercings. She had a couple tattoos. I only had like maybe four at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this chick is freaking edgy.
Yeah.
I like it. She listens to the same music I listen to. And I would always test people that were like, oh, I listen to a lot of music people don't listen to. And I was like, oh yeah, you ever hear of Jack Off Jill? And she was like, oh yeah, this is my favorite song by them. And, you know, these two members went off and did this. And I was like, wait a minute, nobody knows who Jack Off Jill is. It's like, you got to be kidding me. So I put the CD in and she was like, you're the first guy that I've ever met to have this CD.
Really?
And we just hit it off. And it was from there on, you know, we had our ups and downs a little bit, but it was nothing major.
Yeah.
And when I came home from Afghanistan, I remember we were in the gym and I was texting her. It's like, oh my gosh, we're in the same building. You know, I can't wait to see you. But there's 1,000 people in this gym.
Yeah.
And I came out and I cut left and our photographer was there that was going to be doing our wedding because we got married before I left, but we were having the ceremony when I got home.
Okay.
and she caught it perfectly. I was the third person coming in, and she was sitting, or not even sitting, she was standing by the door.
Yeah.
Because all the bleachers were full. And of course, everybody goes crazy and everything. And I locked eyes with her for the first time in 12 months. And it was like, as crazy as it sounds, cheesy as it sounds, it was, I couldn't hear a thing.
Yeah.
But all I could see was her burgundy leather jacket and her hair and just her. And it was like there was nobody else in the world for like a hot second. And I just mouthed to her, I love you so much.
Yeah.
Because as she's like right here, I'm coming straight down towards her. And then I had to cut right.
Oh.
Not as close as me and you are.
Oh, wow.
I still to this day, I don't know why I didn't just keep walking.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm so drilled into the military life that that was the formation.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew I had to do this. I could have kept walking. Nobody would have paid any, never mind to me at all.
Yeah.
But I knew I had to. And our photographer actually caught me lip syncing that
to her.
And after, you know, I was talking to the photographer a couple months later, and she said that she was sitting there bawling as she's taking these pictures. She's like, I saw what you said. There were other people that saw what you said. And, you know, she was crying. And she got some rare photos of me crying.
That's awesome.
That I think it's the being only in one that in moment. Existence.
Yeah, just being in that moment.
Yeah, and it was really special. You know, the whole, I always thought, you know, if a woman can stay with me through a deployment, it's going to be forever.
Yeah.
Because the only bad thing I really did to her was I didn't want her to worry while I was gone.
Yeah.
And we did route clearance. So I was gone every day. But there's a USO on every post.
Okay.
So we would clear a route from one post to another all the way around Afghanistan. And there were a couple of days where I couldn't make phone calls because we were stuck with an IED or, you know, some kind of issue.
Yeah.
But I would call her every single day. And she never even noticed that it was a different phone number every single day. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just sitting on the fob, not doing anything. And I get home and, you know, I sent my trunk home first and everything. And she didn't open it or anything. She didn't know what was in it.
Yeah.
Didn't know if she wanted me to, or her to open it. But I'm going through the stuff after I get home. It was like the second day that I was home. And I was like, oh, here's all my medical paperwork. Here's all this. Here's all that. And she's flipping through. And she was like, okay, it says here you were in a firefight on this day. It says that you were hit with two IEDs on this day. Another firefight over here. You told me you were on the FOB.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, about that.
Whoops.
She was irate.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I did it to keep you safe.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't worry. Yeah. Well, I was already worried. I'm like, exactly. I didn't want to add to it by telling you, hey, going on a mission tomorrow.
Yeah.
Don't know if I'm going to be back or not.
Yeah. And you did get blown up.
A couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. It's loud. It's loud and it hurts.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Like, it hurts to the point where, like, your teeth hurt.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I can imagine. I can't imagine.
No, it's like they give us all this gear. You know, like they call it the combat diaper. It covers your nuts in case something happens. All this stuff. And you look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man when you're in the trucks.
Yeah.
But the one thing that they should give you is a mouth guard.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you get hit, your teeth shatter so bad.
Ugh.
I got the last time, January 23rd of 2013, I got hit. And I was in a Husky, and, you know, it's designed to blow up.
Yeah.
It's the safest vehicle you could be in, but it's a one-man rig. I got hit right underneath my truck. Everything goes flying off of it. Cab fills up with sand. And I hear the chatter over the radio, but I can't talk because there's so much sand and dust and dirt everywhere. My eyes are burning from all of it. My teeth hurt. My throat hurts because now I'm trying to suck air in and it's just dust and sand. Ears are ringing constantly. I can't hear anything. I'm trying to wiggle my toes, making sure that I still have feet.
Yeah.
I'm counting my fingers. I still can't see. And the truck comes across and, you know, I can see them like trying to look into my window and everything. And I gave them the thumbs up and I hear over the radio, oh, Poling's fine. You know, he's gave us the thumbs up. And at that point I had gone, see, but in 2013, about 15 years without saying a cuss word. And all those guys were like, oh, he's going to say one on this deployment, we can tell. And the company commander was in the back, and he's like, John, you got to say something, man. I got to report this up, but unless you say something, I can't report it.
Yeah.
And I get on it, and I was like, Dad, gum, that hurt. And the radio silence for like, it felt like an hour, but it was like a minute because everybody was cracking up.
Yeah.
And the commander comes back, and you can hear the laughter in his voice. And he's like, not even now. Not even now are you going to say, like, drop an F-bomb or something. Yeah. I was like, no, sir, I've had enough bombs today. I don't need an F-bomb.
Wow.
You know, and it's one of those things where everything that I've been through military-wise, everyone's always like, oh, he's going to cuss today.
Yeah.
Like, we can see it in his eyes. He's stressed out. He's ready to go, and I'll drop a man alive, father mucker, piece of crap, son of a gun, shut the front door.
You do it well. So I spent quite a bit of time with you before I ever... I think your ex-wife is actually the person that brought it to my attention.
Yeah, most people don't pick up on it.
I never picked up on it. And then I think your ex-wife is actually the one that brought it to my attention. And then since then, I'd like pay attention. I'm like, son of a bitch.
I've had so many people like, oh, I've heard you cuss. I'm like, no, you haven't, man.
Yeah.
Like, March 12th will be the 20-year anniversary. And I was like, nah, it's so in my DNA that I just can't stop.
That's like, even funnier that you know the date.
Well, it's like... My current girlfriend, she's like, I don't know if I want you to cuss. I was like, yeah, maybe the 20th, you know, I'll have a cussing party. Everybody comes over and I just cuss everybody out. Like, this is 20 years of built up hostility and I'm just going to cuss every one of you out at once.
Oh, man.
But she's like, I don't know if I want to. In fact, my ex-wife, the one that you know, she said that if I ever cussed at her, she would be terrified.
Yeah.
Because she knows that she had pushed me,
you
know, so far, more so than the Taliban could have pushed me.
Shit has gotten real.
Yeah, it got real quick. And she's like, I would probably just sit here and cry if you even called me like a butt or anything. If I were to cuss the smallest cuss word at her, because she knows.
Yeah.
But I'd call her a brat all the time. Like, stop acting like a brat. Like, I know what you mean. Like, yeah, I mean a brat. She goes, oh, no, you don't. And it would actually end a lot of our fights because we'd start laughing about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be 20 years, March 12th.
That's craziness, man. So we've been all over the board tonight.
Yeah, we have.
It's been fun. I'm going to wrap this up the same way I wrap up every podcast. If you had one piece of advice to give anybody, whether it's, you know, going through a relationship, growing up, kind of whatever it may be, what would your piece of advice be?
You know, as cliche as it may be, the best advice I would always say is, no one's better than you, and you're not better than anybody. The second you start thinking you're better than somebody, you need to humble yourself. And if somebody thinks they're better than you, you need to get rid of them. Yeah. Because there's no room for anyone toxic in anyone's life.
Absolutely. I love it. John, I appreciate you joining me.
Hey, thanks, Zach. I appreciate it.
Try this again. Okay. God damn it. So stupid. So stupid. You think I'd figure this out by now. I've done 21 episodes and I can't figure this shit out.